I'm going to talk primarily about the alt-right and in relation also to anti-fascism. A lot of what I'm going to say is borrowed from a report that I wrote that is available. It's called Control, Alt, Delete, an anti-fascist report about the alternative right, coming out in a couple of weeks as the lead essay in a book of the same title being published by Chris Blebedev Books. So what I want to do today is three things. I want to, first of all, just give a little bit of a framework in terms of how I understand and how I position the alt-right historically and analytically in terms of relation to other political forces. Secondly, I want to, without going into a lot of detail, touch on what I see as some of the core distinctive features of the alt-right as a political movement. And then thirdly, I want to address the issue of anti-fascism and at least help to frame a discussion of that topic specifically as it relates to the alt-right. So what are we talking about? The alt-right, it's a term that's been used in various different ways in the last year or two. As I understand it, the alt-right or the alternative right refers to a specific current within the U.S. far right, which is very loosely organized. It primarily is active online through websites and blogs and chat rooms and Twitter and other social media, although it does have some formal organizations and some conferences and so on, and is trying to establish a physical presence. Contrary to the notion that it is simply a cover word for neo-Nazism, I see it as encompassing a number of different far-right political currents which are interacting. Neo-Nazism is definitely in the mix, but there are others as well. But these are all united by a hostility not only to the left and to liberalism, but very much to mainstream conservatism. And most, but not all, of these tendencies within the alt-right have united in support of Donald Trump. So when I refer to the alt-right as a far-right movement, I'm actually using that term in a fairly specific and somewhat idiosyncratic way. As I use the term far-right, I'm referring to political forces that have two characteristics. And this is in this moment in the United States. This is not across all times and places, but what we're, you know, where we are now. Far-right movements are those that, first of all, regard human or social inequality as natural or inevitable or desirable, and that can mean inequality based on race or ethnicity, gender, or various other criteria. And secondly, that regard the existing U.S. political system as illegitimate, as something that they need to break away from or dismantle or destroy. And so this kind of a political movement inherently has a contradictory relationship with the established order in this country. And the alt-right specifically, on the one hand, is feeding and fueling and fomenting various forms of oppression and repression and scapegoating and violence against people of color, against Muslims, against women, against LGBT communities, and to a certain degree against Jews, and is fueling authoritarianism across the board. At the same time, the alt-right does not accept and does not support the existing political order. There are a few different versions of what they want, but the general consensus or predominant sentiment in the alt-right is to break up the United States and establish one or more white ethno states. And they say, you know, if you want to have, you know, ethno states for some other groups, or you want to have a multicultural state over here, that's fine. But we want our ethno state in North America. One of the things that I think is important about far-right movements, as far as, you know, how they have a broader impact and aren't simply an irrelevant fringe, is that in many situations, there's a kind of dynamic tension that gets set up between far-right forces and forces that I would call system-loyal branches of the right. And we've seen that, you know, number of times in the past several decades, but we certainly see that at work in the alt-right's relationship with the Trump campaign and now going forward to the Trump presidency. As I said, most of the alt-right has supported Trump. They came online behind his campaign fairly early on and helped in a significant way to advance his cause through their skillful use of online tactics, such as, for example, the hashtag Cuckservative, which was a meme that they promoted to attack Trump's opponents in the Republican primaries. And they've also used internet-based harassment campaigns to terrorize people who oppose Trump and who they saw as vulnerable. So they played a significant role, but they have never said Trump represents our politics. They see Trump as useful. They talk about moving the Overton window. I don't know if you've heard this phrase. It's the idea that what we want to do is shift the parameters of acceptable political discourse. We want to take our ideas, which, you know, many people have regarded as, you know, beyond the pale, and first of all, make them acceptable, and then make them common sense, so that people will start to say, well, sure, white ethno state, that sounds fine. You know, maybe I don't want to live there, but okay. You know, that's their strategy. Once they can achieve that, they think, then institutional and systemic change will be easier to achieve. Kind of relationship between the alt-right and Trump is, as they have gained attention, they've attracted sympathizers, people who don't necessarily agree with all of their goals, but find their online activism, find their propaganda, find their supremacist mongering useful and things that they can agree with. And the core members of the alt-right have referred to these folks as the alt-light. The idea being that, you know, it's kind of like a watered-down version of our politics. I would say that Breitbart, Steve Bannon, Milo Yiannopoulos, these are some examples of the alt-light. They very much are in accord with the alt-right when it comes to supremacist mongering, Islamophobia, attacks on people of color and women. But they don't really support a white ethnostate. They want to work within the existing political framework. So let me just touch on a few things that I see as distinctive about the alt-right relative to other far-right forces of recent decades. As I mentioned, the alt-right primarily is active online. It's something that, I mean, it started around 2010 with an online journal called AlternativeRight.com that was edited by Richard Spencer, which quickly kind of networked with other right-wing forces. It has grown to attract people who are active in various online communities such as 4chan and Reddit, as well as Twitter and Facebook and so on. And this is both a strength and a weakness of the alt-right. On the one hand, they have, as I've said, made very effective use of online tactics. On the other hand, they have very limited ability to muster an on-the-ground presence. And this is something that they are trying to change. They're trying to develop that capacity, partly through their own resources and partly by networking, but with other right-wing forces. But they haven't really gotten very far with that. Also, the alt-right, there's a real range of sort of forms of discourse that it promotes. And I think this has been something of a bit of a confusion. It started really as with kind of an intellectual tone. I mean, alternativeright.com was, you know, they articles and, you know, intellectual discourse and so on. And you see that on other organs such as Countercurrents or the American Renaissance, some of the leading alt-right journals. But as it's grown, it's attracted trolls. And so now, I think a large part of what the alt-right is about is the kind of completely anti-intellectual kind of attack politics of Twitter and so forth. And it's not that this is a factional division. It's like a division of labor. I mean, these are very much interconnected, and there are places where these two branches of the movement meet and support each other. But it does give them a capacity to speak to different audiences in different ways. The alt-right is predominantly white nationalist. As I said, there is this shared goal of a white ethno-state. But there are various different forms of white nationalism that are included. There are some alt-rightists who identify with neo-Nazism more or less explicitly. There's a lot of alt-rightists who are very much influenced by the European New Right, which is this project that started in France in the late 60s and other European countries to kind of rework fascist politics to make it more kind of acceptable for the modern age. So, for example, rather than talking about promoting the master race, European New Rightists talk about promoting biocultural diversity, right? At the same time, there are other supremacist and ideological themes that are very important in the alt-right, and in it, for some members, are more important than white nationalism. And I think, first and foremost, misogynist politics is on the list. There's a lot of overlap between the alt-right and the so-called manosphere, which is another right-wing community that mostly exists online. It's anti-feminist. It promotes the idea that women are in control and dominating society, and men need to kind of redress this and, you know, so forth. And the manosphere and then feeding into the alt-right has promoted a particularly virulent form of misogyny. It says it's not just that men should be in control or that men should be in charge or, you know, that there are natural sexual differences and women have a place in the family and nurturing and this kind of thing. I mean, they say all those things. And that's pretty standard across most of the right. But they also say we're not interested in recruiting women. We're not interested in bringing women into our movement because women aren't important. We don't think women have the capacity to function as political agents. And we don't think that women should have any kind of political voice. And this is something that actually goes beyond what even many neo-Nazis have been saying in recent decades, where you've seen groups that have, you know, could have put up this sort of ideal of white Aryan women as warriors in their own right who are going to sort of do battle alongside their men. And yes, they're going to be raising the kids and stuff, but they're also going to pick up the sword. The alt-right isn't about that at all. Women aren't important. Women have no role. That's their message. The alt-right has also promoted a particular mix of authoritarianism and decentralism. And this is something you see really in a number of different versions across different right-wing sectors. But it's rooted partly in the European New Right. It's rooted partly in the libertarian tradition and right-wing anarchist ideologies. But it's the idea that we're not trying to establish some, you know, big overarching totalitarian system. We want to break up the United States, right? We want to establish these little polities. And those polities will be based on supremacist forms of social and political organization, but on a smaller scale. Now, this is, you know, it's not like there's a unified party line about this across the movement, but that's kind of where a lot of the discourse tends. And then the last point I want to make in terms of distinctive features is that there are certain issues where the alt-right is simply divided. And two that I think are particularly salient are about Jews and about homosexuality. With regard to Jews, I would say, you know, there is this, certainly this anti-Semitic consensus across the movement, but there are different forms of it. Some alt-rightists say Jews have no place, we want to have nothing to do with them. We do not support them having any kind of role in our movement or in our society or in our strategy. Others say, well, actually, yeah, it's true that Jews have been a corrosive and subversive and damaging force in our society. So therefore, what we need is to get them to move to Israel, where they will be out of our hair, they won't be subverting our society, and instead they'll be playing a very useful, positive role by being a bulwark against all of those brown-skinned Muslims. That's starting the same premise, different strategies, and I think that's one where there's going to be, you know, real potential for conflict with the Trump administration, which at least for the most part has tended to be very strongly pro-Zionist, very strongly aligned with right-wing Israeli politics. With regard to homosexuality, again, there is a general consensus across the alt-right toward homophobia, toward saying any kind of same-sex relationship, any kind of LGBT presence or visibility or identity has, you know, is not something we support. And yet, there are important figures within the movement that are openly homosexual. They don't necessarily accept the word gay or support that. But it, in many cases, has to do with this notion that we're all about men, you know, it's about men relating to each other and working together and bonding with each other. And in some cases, if that's going to take a sexual form, okay, but it goes along with excluding and just sort of pushing women out of the picture. Jack Donovan is kind of the prime example of this. He promotes the whole notion of male tribalism, which has appealed in fact, to a number of heterosexual men within the movement as well. Okay, one more thing. Just in terms of where the alt-right is at right now, I mean, they were very happy that Trump won. They see themselves as a vanguard of the Trump coalition. They say, you know, we are the ones who can lead the way, take the positions that will help to pull the other Trump forces along with us, or provide space that lets Trump and others in his administration sound more moderate by comparison, right? So that's that dynamic tension I was talking about. But the alt-right has been having some troubles. I mean, you know, everybody's, you know, seen, you know, a million versions of the video of Richard Spencer getting punched. And this is, I think, is important primarily because it made him look ridiculous and just kind of undermined the notion that the alt-right is in charge of, and they're the ones who have the most control of the memes, not this time. But there's also been real conflict within the alt-right and between the alt-right and the sympathizer groups over what's the strategy. You know, do we want to be making fascist salutes at our events? Do we, you know, what's our relationship with the administration going to be going forward? So I think it's a real question of what kind of relationship is that's going to look like going forward. But I do think that it's too soon to write them off and to think that they're just going to, you know, dissipate in infighting or something. They've been in, you know, fighting with each other for years, and it hasn't stopped them yet. Okay, so as I said, the last thing I want to do was just say a little bit about what does all this mean in terms of anti-fascism. And basically, there's three points I want to make. First of all, and this is not specific to the alt-right, but I think that in confronting any kind of significant far-right force, it's important for us to take that fight seriously alongside the fight against the capitalist order and against the entrenched established systems of oppression and social hierarchy that exist. They're interconnected, even and especially given that there are tensions in many instances between the far-right forces and the established system. So looking for ways to link and connect those different fronts of the struggle, I think, is important. And that's why the blog I write for is called Three-Way Fight, right? Secondly, as people probably know, there's been a little bit of controversy lately about some of the anti-fascist actions that have taken place with, for example, the very forceful efforts in Berkeley to shut down Milo Yiannopoulos from speaking, and, you know, other kind of confrontations that have happened. To my mind, you know, there are legitimate disagreements about strategy and about tactics as far as how to confront these people. But one thing I would say that I would urge as a baseline is that we respect the different approaches that people may choose to take, that there will be different approaches that people choose to take. There are people who are going to want to confront fascists, alt-rightists, other far-rightists in a physical way. And I think that has an important place in the struggle. There are other people who are going to take other approaches, whether it's, you know, organizing sort of separate protests or organizing mutual aid initiatives to help those communities that are targeted by these forces or whatever it is. Let's be supportive of each other. Let's not jump to recriminations and second guessing each other as the primary thing. This is a time when we need to work together in our different ways. And the last thing I want to say is, because the alt-right has charted out this new course in terms of online political struggle, it raises new challenges. You know, how do we engage in struggle in this terrain? How do we respond to the effective use of memes? How do we respond to the kind of just horrific online harassment campaigns that have been undertaken with, you know, just people being flooded with hundreds and thousands of rape threats and death threats and, you know, just which draw a tremendous amount not only on racism but particularly misogyny, and which come typically from anonymous Twitter accounts. And so it's very challenging. How do we challenge that? How do we counter it? How do we protect and support each other in defending ourselves against this? There have been some positive things and some creative things that have been done. There's been some very effective doxing of alt-right leaders recently. Doxing means publicly making public personal information about them, so that several leaders of the Right Stuff, which is a leading alt-right forum, were doxed recently. These are people who had based their political activism on being anonymous, you know, using pseudonyms. And several of them have been, you know, put in a difficult position as a result of that. That's, you know, a useful and effective tactic that you know takes an arrow from their own quiver. But again, I think there's a need to continue to look at this question and develop new forms. Again, in the context of relating the anti-fascist struggle to a broader struggle for social change. Thanks.